Okay, well, everybody knows, and I'm going to say the same thing just about every week, so here we go. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is the book of Numbers, or Bamidbar, in the wilderness, and chapter 19. And it says this, as you know, a lot of them start similarly, so this is not the unique word that identifies the parsha itself. It says, though, that, "And Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe and unto Aaron, and he said," here we go, "these, Zot, Hukat," that basically is, this is the statute, the chuk, of the Torah, which Yahuwah has commanded, saying, "Speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring unto you a red heifer without fault, wherein there is no blemish, and upon which has never come a yoke." So let's pause there. And, of course, the name of the parsha thus is Hukat, which is the first unique word in here. That word hook, the root word there, the sheresh in Hebrew, has to do with something which is basically, do it because I say so. You may not understand why, and indeed the general idea of a hook or hukat in this case is you don't necessarily know why. As a matter of fact, there are some references to things that are hukat in the scripture that are, I won't butcher it too badly, hooks, if you will, plural version, and among which is the famous one, the red heifer that we're talking about here. And Solomon even basically has notably said he didn't quite figure out what this red heifer was about. And we're going to, however, get the instruction associated with it, which is, "You then shall give her," this red heifer, "unto Eleazar the priest, and she shall be brought forth outside the camp." So this one is slain outside the camp before his face. "And Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger and sprinkle of her blood towards the tent of the meeting 7 times. Then the heifer shall be burnt in his sight, everything, her skin, her flesh, her blood, with her dung, all of it is burnt. The priest then takes cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet, and he casts it into the midst of the burning heifer, and then the priest washes his clothes. He needs to bathe his flesh in water. After that, he can come into the camp, and he, though, shall still be unclean until evening." So one of the unusual things about the red heifer, and I've told all kinds of jokes about it, and I won't do that this year, so people can rest assured. Anyway, it makes clean things unclean and unclean things clean. Kind of an interesting paradox, isn't it? That's part of the reason I think it's considered a hook and a little bit enigmatic. Anyway, then the one that burns her, he too shall wash his clothes in water, bathe his flesh in water, and is also unclean till evening. And then it takes a man that's clean. He will gather up the ashes of the red heifer and lay them up outside the camp in a clean place. And there it shall be kept for the congregation of the B'nai Israel for a water of sprinkling. It's for purification from sin. And this guy that gathers the ashes of the heifer, he too shall wash his clothes, and he also, like all of the others associated with this process, are unclean until evening. And it shall be unto the children of Israel and unto the stranger that sojourns among them, have we ever heard this phrase before, a hook forever, a hukat olam. He that touches the dead, any part of any man's dead body, is unclean for 7 days. So this is kind of the next section here. We're going to see one of the things for which the ashes and the water of the red heifer are used. So somebody touches a dead body, they're unclean for 7 days. Then that same person is to purify himself on the 3rd day with this ashes of the red heifer, and on the 7th day, and then he shall be clean. But if he doesn't do that, if he doesn't purify himself on the 3rd and the 7th day, he is not clean. Whoever touches the dead, any part of a body of a man that is dead, and he does not purify himself, he has defiled the Mishkan of Yahuwah. That soul shall be cut off from Israel. Because the water of sprinkling was not dashed against him, he shall be unclean. His uncleanness is still upon him. So here we go. Zot HaTorah. This is the instruction. And remember, this is another one of those places where it's translated, "This is the law," but think about it. Instruction makes more sense because there's quite a bit of detail here, right? When a man dies in a tent, everyone that's in there in that tent, or everyone that comes into the tent, everything in the tent too, is unclean for 7 days. If there's an open vessel, which didn't have a covering that was close bound upon it, in other words, a tight-fitting lid, that too is unclean. So anything in the tent, any vessels that aren't closed up, are unclean. Whoever is in an open field and touches someone who has been slain with a sword, or that's just plain keeled over and dead by themselves. Maybe nowadays we'd say, well, they took the poison poke, they were out running, and they just keeled over with a stroke. Or the bone of a man or a grave, any of those things shall be unclean for 7 days. As for the unclean, they shall take of the ashes of the burning of the purification from sin, and running water shall be put thereto in a vessel. So a clean person now takes hyssop, dips it in the water, sprinkles it upon the tent, upon all the vessels, upon all the persons that were in there, and upon the person that touched the bone or the slain or the dead or the grave. All of these things that were associated with the dead or in the tent with somebody who died, all of those things are going to need to be purified with this water. And the clean person then shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. On the seventh day he shall purify him, wash his clothes, bathe himself in water. Then, when evening time comes, he is again clean. But the man that shall be unclean and does not purify himself, notice this is the second time we've heard this, that soul shall be cut off from the midst of the assembly, because he has defiled the sanctuary of Yahuwah. The water of sprinkling hasn't been dashed against him. He's unclean. This, it says, shall be a huch olam. Huchat olam. A statute forever upon them. He that sprinkles the water of sprinkling shall wash his clothes. He that touches the water of sprinkling shall be unclean until evening. And whosoever the unclean person touches is also unclean, and any soul that touches him is unclean until evening. So this this idea of death, I think, is key here. What we're seeing, there's kind of an element of contagion associated with it, that death carries an uncleanness. Next chapter says, and the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, Kol Ha'edah, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month. People abode in Kadesh, and there Miriam died and was buried there. Now, at this point, again, we've seen this before, too. We're going to see it again. Now there's no water for the congregation, no Maim, and they assembled themselves, what else, together against Moshe and against Aaron. And they did what we've seen before. By the way, this time is going to be, if you think about it, probably the climax of all of this. People strove with Moshe, and they spoke, and they said, "Oh, we sure wish we had perished out there, along with our brother, when they perished before Yahuwah. Now, why, oh, why have you brought this assembly of Yahuwah into this wilderness to die here, we along with all of our cattle? And why have you made us, you mean old son of a gun, you, why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us into this evil place? Because there's no seed here, no figs, no vines, no pomegranates, nor even is there any water to drink." So Moshe and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly into the door of the tent of meeting. They fell upon their faces, and the glory of Yahuwah appeared unto them. And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. "Take the rod." Now, listen carefully, because obviously Moshe should have listened a bit more carefully. "Take the rod," this would be his staff, "assemble the congregation, you and Aaron your brother, and speak," notice how I emphasize that, "speak you unto the rock before their eyes, that it gives forth its water. And you shall bring forth to them water out of the rock, so you can give the congregation and their cattle water to drink." So Moshe took the rod from before Yahuwah as he was commanded. So far, so good. Moshe and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. So far, so good. And he said to them, "Listen up, or hear now, you rebels. Are we to bring forth water out of this rock?" Interesting word, right? "You rebels. Do we need to bring more water out of this rock for you?" So Moshe lifted up his hand. Did he speak to the rock? No, that's not exactly what it says here. He lifted up his hand and he smote the rock. He struck it with his rod. No, not once, but twice. Water came forth abundantly, and the congregation drank along with their cattle. Now, as you might suspect, this is not what he was commanded. It doesn't say as Yahuwah commanded Moshe, as it sometimes does, and there's a problem. Moshe then said Yahuwah then said unto Moshe and Aaron, "Because you did not believe in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the B'nai Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." Wow. These, it says, are the waters of Meribah. And that word means strife or contention. Where, in fact, the children of Yahuwah, of Israel, rather, strove with Yahuwah, and he was sanctified in them. So, at this point, it's kind of like that's the end of the story, but it's not. We're going to see that this is going to have repercussions, as you are probably well aware at this point, for a long time. Moshe then sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom, king of the Edomites, and he said, here's what my brother Israel says. You know all of the troubles and the travails that we have had, that have befallen us, how our fathers went down into Egypt, how we dwelt down in Mitzrayim, Egypt, a long time, and the Egyptians dealt ill with us along with our fathers. And then we cried out unto Yahuwah. He heard our voice. He sent a malach, a messenger, an angel, and he brought us forth out of there. And behold, here we are in Kadesh, a city in basically the extent, you know, right at the limits of your border. So, here's what we are asking. Let us pass, I pray you, through your land. We won't pass through your fields or your vineyards, nor will we drink of the water out of the wells. We'll just go along the king's highway. We won't turn aside to the right hand or the left until we have passed by your other border. And Edom responded and said unto him, you shall not pass through me, lest I come out with the sword against you. And the children of Israel said unto him, well, we'll go up by the highway. If we drink of your water, I and my cattle, then we'll pay you for it. We'll give you the price of it, the silver for it. Just let us pass through on our feet. There's no hurt here. Response, nope, you shall not pass through. Edom then came out against him with much people, with a strong hand. Thus it says, Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border. So Israel therefore turned away from him. And they went from Kadesh, along with the children, all of the children of Israel, the whole congregation. They came to Mount Hor, where Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and Aaron in Mount Hor, by the border of the land of Edom. And he said the following, Aaron is going to die here. Aaron will be gathered unto his people. He isn't going to enter the land which I have given unto the children of Israel, because you rebelled against my word there at the waters of Meribah. Now, in Hebrew, it's interesting. It's literally at the words of my mouth. At P. So, you take Aaron and Eleazar his son, bring him up to Mount Hor. And take Aaron, strip him of his garments, put him upon Eleazar his son, and Aaron there shall be gathered to his people. He will die there. So Moshe did as Yahuwah commanded. They went up to Mount Hor in the sight of Kol Ha'edah, all the congregation. Moshe stripped Aaron of his garments, he put him on Eleazar his son, and there Aaron died, right at the top of the mountain, and Moshe and Eleazar came down from the mountain. And when in fact all the congregation saw that Aaron was dead, they wept for him, they moaned, they mourned for 30 days, including all of Beit Israel, it says. And the final chapter, chapter 21 here, not quite the final one yet, says, the Canaanite, the king of Arad, who dwelt in the south, had heard tell about Israel, coming by way of Atarim, and he also fought against Israel, took some of them captive. And Israel vowed a vow unto Yahuwah and said, if you will indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I will utterly destroy their city. So this sounds like something that it says Israel. Interesting. The name that is given to the man who's not with them, but these are his descendants. And it sounds like they're acting in that sense. Yahuwah then hearkened to the voice of Israel. Notice that phraseology? That's kind of unusual. He delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them and their cities. The name of the place was called Hormah. And they journeyed from there, from Mount Hor, by the way to the Sea of Reeds, to encompass the land of Edom. They went around it, in other words. And the soul of the people, the Nephesh, became impatient because it was a long way. And there's some irony in here because of the way. And it's Beit Derech, which is interesting. And it's the first use of that phrase, Beit Derech, is the reference to the tree of life. And I've got that note in my margin. It's kind of an interesting parallel, isn't it? Yahuwah, the people then spoke against Yahuwah and against Moshe, because, right, this is a long way around. Oh, and we've heard this. Why, oh, why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die here Bamidbar in the wilderness? Because there's no bread, there's no water, and our soul loathes. Our soul loathes. We just hate this light bread. And literally, the Hebrew word there is hakulik. means contemptible or worthless. This is stuff that they've been eating for decades, and I can understand why it might have gotten a bit old, but now they're saying it's contemptible. It's kept them alive, literally, most of them, most of their lives. And so, as you might suspect, that didn't go over well. Yahuwah then sent fiery serpents. And this is the first time we see this word used, and it's Nakshim, right? We know the Nakhash was the thing that we see in Genesis chapter 3. This is Ha-Seraphim. It's rendered as fiery or also kind of copper-colored, brazen, bronze-like. A fiery copper-colored set of serpents. And it's Ha-Nakshim, Ha-Seraphim among the people. They bit a lot of folks, and many of the people of Israel died. So the ones that didn't die came to Moshe, and they said, you know what? We've sinned, because we've spoken against Yahuwah and against you. Pray unto Yahuwah, so that he might just take away these serpents from among us, these Nakashim. And Moshe did. He prayed for the people. And then Yahuwah said unto Moshe, here's what I want you to do. Make your own fiery serpent. Set it up on a pole. So we're going to get a snake on a stick, basically. And lots of references to this you probably have seen. We've talked about a couple of phrases that are used. It's either one serpent on a stick or two associated with the medical profession, medics and the military and so forth. But in any case, this reference obviously has resonated throughout the centuries. And also, there's a certain element of paganism that seems to have kind of come in and seized upon it too. But at this point, there's something here going on that is going to be life-saving. Make yourself a fiery serpent, set up on a pole, and it'll come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he sees it, when he looks upon this thing, he shall live. So, Moshe made a Nakhash Nakhashet, a brass serpent, brass version of the fiery serpent. He set it on a pole, and it came to pass that if a serpent bit someone, that when he looked upon the serpent of brass, Nakhashet, then he lived. So the children of Israel journeyed. Eventually they pitched in this place called Obot. They journeyed from Obot, pitched at Ehe Abarim in the wilderness in front of Moab towards the rising sun, to the east, in other words. Then they journeyed. They pitched in the valley of Zered. From there they journeyed, pitched on the other side of Arnon in Bamidbar in the wilderness that comes out of the border of the Amorites. Arnon, it notes, is the border of Moab, between Moab and the Amorites. And this is the reason why it's said in the book of the wars of Yahuwah, Vaheb in Sufa, in the valleys of Arnon, and the slope of the valleys that inclines towards the seat of Ar, leans upon the border of Moab. So this is an area where there is obviously lots of contention and certainly a lot of history. There they went to Be'er, that is where the well of Yahuwah, of which Yahuwah said to Moshe, gather the people together and I'll give them water. And then Israel sang this song. Spring up, O well, sing ye unto it. The well which the princes dug, which the nobles of the people delved with the scepter, with their staves, and from the wilderness to Matanah, from Matanah to Nahaliel, from Nahaliel to Bamot, from Bamot to the valley that's in the field of Moab, by the top of Pisgah, which looks down upon the desert. And then Israel sent messengers to Sihon. We've heard this name before. This is going to be very fateful. To Sihon, king of the Amorites. And they said the following. This sounds familiar too, doesn't it? We just heard it with respect to the other folks, the Edomites. Let me pass through your land. We won't turn aside into a field, not into a vineyard. We won't drink any of the water out of your wells. We'll just go via the king's highway till we have passed your border. And guess what? Sihon wouldn't allow the people of Israel to pass through his border either. Instead, Sihon gathered all of his people together, and they went out against Israel, Bamidbar, into the wilderness, and they came to Yahaz, and there they fought against Israel. A bad plan. Israel smote him with the edge of the sword, Lefi Cherev. And I always like to make this note. Remember, the sword has a mouth. This is the edge of the sword in the English, but literally, Lefi is the mouth of the sword. And there is an interesting observation Rashi and some others have made. You'll see that it's pretty consistent with an exception we'll actually talk about last week, which is also consistent, but in a descriptive way. In any case, Lefi, the mouth of the sword, is used against the pagans. So Israel smote the the people of Sihon with the mouth of the sword. And then they possessed his land from the Arnon to the Yabbok, even the children of Ammon, for the border of the children of Ammon was strong. So Israel took all these cities, and then they dwelt in all these cities of the Amorites, Heshbon, all the towns thereof, because Heshbon was the city, at least once upon a time, of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab, taken all of his land, even unto Arnon. This is why the parables say, come on out to Heshbon. Let the city of Sihon be built and established. Because a fire is gone out of Heshbon, the flame from the city of Sihon. It has devoured Ar of Moab, the lords of the high places of Arnon. So woe unto thee, Moab. You are undone, O people of Chemosh. He's given his sons, his fugitives, and his daughters into captivity unto Sihon, king of the Amorites. Well, as we see, that was then. We've shot at them. Heshbon has perished, even unto Dibon. We've laid waste unto Nophah, reached into Medeba. Thus, it says, Israel dwelt in the land of the Amorites. So they took what Sihon had. Now, Moshe then sent to spy out Yazer. They took the towns thereof, drove out the Amorites that were there, and then they turned and they went up towards Bashan. We know this famous name. Og, king of Bashan, was there. He went out to battle against them, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And Yahuwah now said unto him, now remember, Og is a big dude. He's one of the remnants of the giants. Yahuwah said to Moshe, don't fear him, fear him not, for I have delivered him into your hand. Notice the past tense. It's a done deal. I've delivered him into your hand, all his people, and his land. And you shall do to him just what you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon. So they smote him, he and his sons and all his people, until there was none left remaining, and they possessed his land too. That takes us to the very end of the Parsha, and the first verse of the next chapter is all, that's where it ends. It says, then the B'nai Israel journeyed, and they pitched their tents, in other words, in the plains of Moab, beyond the Jordan, at, we know this place, Jericho.